everyone, and welcome to Happy Paws, presented by Fear Free. Happy Paws is a podcast by pet lovers for pet lovers. We take a scientific and evidence-backed approach to helping you understand your pet on a deeper level. I'm your host and lead animal trainer for Fear Free, Mikkel Becker. On this episode, I'm joined by world-renowned dog trainer Victoria Stillwell. We talk all things dog behavior and aggression. Without further ado, let's start our show. Is most pressing and like most exciting to you right now? So anything that you're really passionate about?
Gosh, oh my gosh. Well, I think I'm passionate about being an educator. You know, I mean, I love the fact that yes, I'm a dog trainer and first and foremost, but I'm an educator as well. And I love teaching people to be trainers, obviously at VSA, but I'm also excited because we've developed a whole host of new courses for dog lovers on our site, positively.com. And those courses are just state of the art and they are for the everyday dog lover. And so using these courses, I can continue to educate. And I think, I mean, like you're a trainer, you know what it's like. It's just that being able to affect change both in people and their dogs is why we do what we do.
Yes.
And seeing that success. So I think that's what fires me up. I mean, it just does. What can be better than seeing that success?
Oh, 100%. So when you first came on TV with It's Me or the Dog, you were also on TV during a time when there were more controversial methods being used and more intimidation, fear, and force, which I know is something that you are definitely not for or very much against and more towards the definitely positive reinforcement and very gentle, humane methods. Can you explain a little bit about how you've seen that change since that time and if you've seen that change and maybe why people may sometimes get stuck in some of those older, more outdated methods?
Yeah, I came up with the idea for my show in late 2004 and we started filming in 2005. So actually it's 20 years since it's Me or the Dog was conceived, as it were. And I knew there were controversial methods out there. I was not as kind of positive as I am now when I first started, because that's how we were taught. We were taught to think that there was a fixed hierarchy in the household and, you know, had to be your dog's, not so much pack leader, but you had to be that leader of the pack. And I always thought it was a bit odd and a bit strange, but that's how I learned. And however, so when I started my show, there wasn't another television show out there. There wasn't. So there was another show I subsequently found out on a competing channel that started at a similar time, but I didn't know about it until 2007 because I was filming in England. I filmed 4 series of my show in the UK before I came back to America, and that's where Animal Planet picked up the 4 British shows as kind of a filler. But then they did so well, that's when they commissioned another 4 series worth, 4 seasons worth. And it was at that time that I was aware that actually earphones come out. Apologies. That's the time that I was aware that there was other shows out there that were showing more controversial methods. And it was always, I mean, I felt before then dog training was really going in the direction that it needed to go. Whereas we were having more understanding, we were putting dogs' welfare first and foremost, and we were making great strides in the fields of behavioral understanding behavior and the cognitive processes of dogs. And then unfortunately, this other kind of show came on and I think it set dog training, the dog training industry back 20 years. So for the past 20 years, we've been sort of clawing and scraping our way back, and now getting to this kind of new, almost revolution in dog training as well, where it's not so much centered on what a colleague of mine calls task-orientated stuff, as in like a I say, you do, and you get a cookie kind of thing. It's much more centered on the emotional well-being of pets, which is obviously why you and I resonate.
Yes.
And of course, with where I resonate with Fear Free. But unfortunately, with social media, which is so good in some ways, and so, I believe, so terribly bad in others, that we now have on social media some really brutal trainers and some brutal methods out there that are being celebrated and people are copying. And it's almost setting us back again. And so that's, I think, a tragedy. But there are still now more positive trainers in the world today than there have ever been before. And that's a good thing.
Yes, that's a huge win. So when you mention your mindset changing and from your earlier training, and I can totally relate on certain things I learned, even working in the veterinary hospital. And when I was first in there, it was so different than what I'd learned as a trainer, where it was more restraint based. We did a lot of restraint, and I saw a lot of the fear, anxiety, and stress that pets were going through. And I look back on those times when I was doing, you know, putting a dog in lateral recumbency, you know, laying them on their side to trim their nails. And I only did it a couple of times, and I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. I need to only do it for training, but that's before Fear Free. And I, you know, I look back, I'm like, oh, I did that though. I did that. And, you know, so when you mention like certain things that have evolved for you, and you mentioned hierarchy, can you explain a little bit about how your thinking has evolved there?
Yeah. So I was taught, and I had a great mentor, and, I was taught that there was a fixed hierarchy in the household, and that if your dog misbehaved, it was trying to become the leader of your household. It was trying to become the alpha. And in order to kind of get to make the pack hierarchy better and put you all as the head of the pack, you had to show the dog who was boss. That's how I was kind of taught. But, I would sort of put in air quotes, better than maybe others, because I didn't like to ever use physical punishment, but yes. I still used corrective techniques such as certainly sound aversion, banging the lids of pans together to make a noise. And I mean, all kinds of things like that, just stuff that I would never do today. But what I mean by hierarchy is that we believed that, you know, that there's a hierarchy in the household, and it really goes, you know, parents and then, you know, children underneath, which of course that's kind of normal. That's a familial hierarchy, right? But with our dogs, when our dogs misbehaved, well, they were above the adults, and then it would go dog and then adults and then children underneath. And so I would do these kind of the way to illustrate it, I would put magnets on the fridge and I'd have the dog's face at the top, and then I would have the adults underneath, and then to illustrate that this is what's happening in your household. Well, we know that that's just baloney, because we know that dogs are dogs and humans are humans, and that even in a group of multi-dogs, or multi-dog group, I should say, that the hierarchy is always fluid. And so, and also to think that we as people and can be part of a dog's pack, or a group of dogs can be part of it, just we're two different species. And we have to look at ourselves as two different species. And if the dog is not behaving in the way you like in the home, mostly because it's a dog just being a dog, we just don't like the kind of behaviors that sometimes dogs like doing, then we use corrective techniques in order to stop the dog from doing what we don't like. And then we think that they're taking over, and then we use corrective. I mean, it just, and then there's just this in this awful cycle. So That's what I mean by hierarchy. But when you really look at hierarchy, even in a multi-dog household, you do see it's fluid and it is about access to resources. And so where my one dog might really be very much protective over the food bowl, the other dog doesn't really care about that, but they really care about where they sleep. And then the other dog doesn't care about that. So then that works because each dog has primary access to the things that they value. But the problem happens when dogs want to have access to the same things, primary access to the same thing. And that then four can cause, you know, fights and all kinds of issues. But so that's what I mean. Hierarchy is fluid, as it is actually in people, because you might have the person who's like the CEO at work, but then they come back and then they have to do the kid's laundry or, you know,
yes,
the wife's laundry or whatever, or the husband's laundry. So it's all fluid with people as well.
No, that's a great point. I think of my boyfriend, Ryan, is an attorney, and at work, he is just this powerhouse, super strong, like just really more of like what you think of like a dominant personality, so good at what he does. He comes home and he is just the nicest person. My daughter and I both, my daughter's 14. She's like, Ryan, you need to stick up for yourself. Like, you're too nice. But it's this total difference between work Ryan and home Ryan, completely different people. But I mean, the same person, but it's so complex. And I think that's a really, really great way to capture that, because we as people are so different in different contexts. And it's the same thing with dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. Environment really does have a lot to do with it.
So you mentioned like going against the use of intimidation, force, physical punishment, things that might scare the dog. Why is that? Why are you passionate about using non-aversive methods?
Well, I get called a snowflake a lot. I get called a snowflake and just, you know, weak, and that this all this positive training works with the small fluffy dogs and dogs that are confined, but it doesn't work with the real aggressive dogs and the big large dogs and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous and just stupid and ignorant. It's really important, regardless of what dog you have, the age, the breed, the size, the issue, that we try and work with the dog so that we can instill more confidence and create more emotional stability, because dogs that are emotionally stable are safer to live with.
Yes.
And that's what I say. I said, whether you own a dog or not, you have a dog or not, or whether you like dogs or not, you better hope that the person down the road, or the person in your street, or the person who has a dog who your child is going to have a play date with, the kid that lives in that house that has a dog, is emotionally stable. And fear, intimidating a dog and causing fear in a dog, is not going to promote emotional stability. It's going to create stress and going to create anxiety. And what do stressed out and anxious dogs, what can they do? They can sometimes tell you that they don't feel great. And that might not be in the way that a person likes. And that might be growling, it might be snapping, and it might be biting. And so for me, not only is this just ethical, really, because I'm put the animal's welfare first and foremost, to me, it's about public health and safety.
Yes.
And as trainers, whether you're a trainer on TV or you're not, you have a responsibility to the public as well as the dogs.
Yes, that's really, really well said. So one thing, when I've talked with people that maybe are more into some of the aversive methods, a lot of times they may mistake a dog that is lying on the ground or that's sitting and is really quiet as being a dog that's better. And like, as you said before, a lot of times people just want that negative behavior to stop. And they may miss some of those other signals that the dog is showing that maybe they not all is well. But I think that sometimes when they just see it on TV where the dog is lunging, snapping, trying to bite, and maybe is being restrained, and all of a sudden they do this coercive type of method on the dog. The dog then is sitting or lying down, they're quiet. What might that person be missing that they could actually look for if they're watching that back again?
Well, interestingly enough, they've done studies on this. And the studies show that when dogs have been put into an alpha role, that is, alpha role is a corrective tool where a dog is laying on its, held down, restrained on its back or on its side in order for it to submit to the person who's holding it down. And when the dog does eventually submit, then it is seen as a success. And it's seen that the dog, or it's told that the dog has calmed down. When actual fact studies have shown that there is a massive release of the stress hormone cortisol during this procedure, as well as afterwards. So actually, what you're looking at and thinking, this is a dog that's calm, now it's well behaved, is actually a dog that is in shutdown. Mm-hmm. And shutdown is a very important tool for survival, because you're going to just shut down and hope that that thing that is holding you down will stop and leave you alone. So if you can't fight your way out, you might as well do nothing. Yeah. You feel very stressed out and freaked out inside and fearful and intimidated, but you don't react because you're just hoping that they're going to stop. And that, for trainers who don't understand that actually that behavior where the dog's doing nothing is not well-behaved or a dog being good or whatever. It is a dog that's just, it's shut down. No, that's again, a tragedy to see. But it's misinterpreted all the time. And that's where I think an understanding of body language is vital, and an understanding of what shutdown's all about. If you're going to use these techniques on dogs, don't label their non-behavior as a success, because it's not. It's suppression. That's what it is. And it might look like the behavior has changed, and indeed, the behavior might change for a bit. If how does your dog feel? And then what happens if your dog is put in the situation again? Maybe it's going to react in the same way, and then it's going to get corrected again. And I've seen this a lot because I've worked a lot with working dogs, especially with police dogs. And some of these police dogs, especially that are used by departments here in the United States, are repurposed from the military. So these are hard dogs. We're talking Malamars, German Shepherds that have seen service out in Iraq or Afghanistan. And they come back, and then they are given to a green handler in a police department in Georgia, for example. And these dogs are wired. And in fact, these dogs have been so brutally handled that they built up a punishment, what we call a punishment callus. And so you could put that shock collar on 10, on the highest thing, and it would go, what's that? Mm-hmm. It's not going to respond. And that's a tragedy.
Yes, absolutely. Now, when you talk about fallout of punishment, can you expand upon that a little bit more, some of the risks and what might happen and how that really can impact my boyfriend? I know I'm going back to Ryan again, but as a lawyer, it's actually been really fun. He's been learning how to train. He's gotten so into it, and it's been really fun. And the more that we've talked about it, the more he's like, gosh, there are very few laws that really regulate this industry. And you know, that's a big problem. And it's a really big problem in terms of these dogs that have this power to inflict some really serious harm. And if you're using some of those aversive methods, and I've talked to him a bit about some of the fallout of it, he's like, that's a huge, huge problem. But can you explain a little bit more about some of those risks and what could happen long-term to those dogs and to the people that are around them?
Yeah. If you are going to apply aversives to your dog, then you are creating what I believe to be a ticking time bomb. And dogs really have their one defense mechanism, and that's their teeth. And so if you are going to use these techniques and correctors and punish your dog in the name of training and just living with your dog and you're going to use physical punishment like that, you're going to create fear and anxiety. That's just what you're going to do. And with that stress and that fear and that anxiety, you have dogs that can no longer feel comfortable and aren't confident and are very insecure, and will show that, and they'll show that with their teeth. And so you've created a potentially dangerous dog because of what you've done. And so, you know, using shock collars, for example, shock collars in the UK, I don't know about here, in the UK, there is a description or disclaimer on the shock collar, which says, do not use on aggressive dogs. Do not use on dogs that are showing aggressive behavior. Well, the shock collar is used a lot for dogs that are reacting to other dogs, right? So yeah, people are using it for aggressive behavior. But if you have to have a piece of equipment, a tool that tells you you should not use this with a dog that is showing aggressive behavior, why? Because it is dangerous and because it's going to cause more aggressive behavior. They know that. Mm-hmm. The manufacturers know that. That's the reason why they put the disclaimer on it. And so even if you call positive trainers like me snowflakes or weak or soft or whatever you want to say, whatever stuff you want to say, it's nothing is ever going to take away from the facts. And the facts are, if you use punishment like that to cause fear and intimidate your dog into obeying, you are going to increase that dog's anxiety level, and you are going to increase the likelihood that that dog is going to bite at some point.
Yes.
Because you've given it nowhere else to go.
Amen. Last week, Victoria, I was working with a Weimaraner, and this pet parent had told me they've never used treats before in training or toys because they were told that they should not bribe their dog and they should not have to have cookies or treats or a toy on them to get their dog to listen to them. So instead, they went to this training class that used more aversive methods. And unfortunately, this dog is now an adult dog who started off as a puppy being trained with very aversive methods. And the dog, even as a puppy, actually bit the trainer who tried to force the dog into a situation that was too much for this dog. That's a little side note, but it was very upsetting to hear that. And what was really cool, just have to say on that Weimaraner, is just the amazing progress the dog has made in just literally one day. The family was like, wow, our dog is so smart, so motivated, like is learning so well, and treats do work really well for him. But they were afraid to use them before because they had been told by that training organization that it was bribery and they shouldn't use that. So as a positive reinforcement trainer, how do you counter that idea that as positive reinforcement trainers, that we are relying on bribery to get something done, or that we always have to have treats on us in order to get our dog to listen?
Yeah, well, first of all, the whole idea of food as bribery, again, is just complete misunderstanding. And I thought that that had kind of gone the way of the dodo, that it was like people didn't think that anymore because it's so ridiculous. But again, I saw it the other day when someone was advertising their services of like, you know, we don't use food in training because it's bribery. And I'm like, oh, for goodness sake, come on. That is just ridiculous. So everybody wants to feel good, okay? And when we're learning, we need motivators. And so in school, you get the teacher saying, hey, good job. And or you get a gold star, or you get to go out to recess earlier, or, you know, this is great reinforcement for a job well done. And with people, we like it as well. We get paid when we for the work that we do. That's reinforcement. And so that's also a motivator. Well, that's all we're doing for our dogs. We're just motivating them. We're just saying, hey, you did a great job. And the way we do that is sometimes we praise them. Sometimes we play. Sometimes we give them a toy, and other times we give them food, whatever the dog loves. And food is a real powerful motivator, but it's also it's a bridge, right? I work with a lot of very difficult dogs that come from puppy mill situations, everything from Shih Tzus to German Shepherds. And I have to use whatever I can to start building trust. And what is one of the best ways is food. We're animals, we eat. They're animals, they eat. And yes, sometimes in stressful situations, they won't because their digestion shuts down and they're too stressed to eat. But when you start that relationship with any dog and you start that relationship over food, then you begin to build trust. It's why when we go out on those dates, we go for that meal, right? Food is a bonding tool. It's something that we can enjoy together. I'm a big fan of social eating. It's one of the ways that I can bond with dogs is by socially eating with them. And so, you know, it might be that I'm just eating and the dog's eating at the same time, or I might eat and then give a little bit to the dog and I might, there you go. That is, I'm now building up a social bond between us because eating for a lot of dogs is social time, as it is for humans. So I use that food. But the other thing I'd say, as well as being a powerful motivator and really easy to use, because let's not sugarcoat this. Sometimes us trainers, we're dealing with stuff and we need to do it fast. And food is easy to use, and it's easy for us to use, and it's easy for clients to use. Dogs love it, so why not use it? The other thing is that, yeah, as much as your dog loves you, and it'd be lovely if your dog loved you all the time so that it would do anything that you say, but at the end of the day, it's also a great conversation between you. Food is a great conversation starter and a conversation ender as well. But it has the power. Food can change the way the brain works. Now, we know when dogs are in seek mode, when they're putting their nose on the ground and they're sniffing and they're gathering all that odor in, that there is there's a release of the neurotransmitter dopamine in the brain. That is the feel-good chemical. And that is responsible for reward-driven learning. It's responsible for motivating. It feels good. It's also really important for coordination. So why wouldn't you use food? Because it is bringing joy to your dogs. And now we know, without a shadow of a doubt, what food does. So I would say to all those naysayers out there, okay, well, if you don't believe it, then I want you to look at the science. Dr. Gregory Burns at Emory University, as well as Adam McClosey in Budapest, Hungary with Family Dog Project, as well as many other universities in the world, have now functional MRIs where they're doing functional MRIs on dogs that are awake. And they positively train these dogs to go into MRI machines. It's all done with treats and everything. And so these dogs are really good at going to an MRI machine, lying down with the headphones on. And so images are taken of the brain in real time. This is what they found. On the top of your head, if you could remove your skull, you kind of got a, like a butterfly, sort of. Maybe it looks a bit like two kidneys together. It's called the caudate nucleus. And it lights up in people when people feel joy or pleasure. Well, dogs, when they were trained to go into the MRI machine, they are also trained to look at what various signals mean. And so a signal of like raising an arm means they're about to get a treat. So they were trained that raise your arm, give a treat, raise your arm, give a treat, raise your arm, give a treat. But then if there was another signal that meant no treat was coming, right? So two hands together, no treat was coming. Fast forward to the MRI machine, the dog's in the MRI machine. Sees the signal that food is about to come. Food doesn't come, but signal that food is about to come. Guess what happens? The caudate nucleus, just like with humans, lights up in their brain. We now know, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that dogs feel joy when they are anticipating a reward. And that could be food or toys or somebody simply, their owner, the person that loves them, walking into a room. Now, you tell me that that's not great evidence to support why we use food.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And it really does. It impacts the emotional state of the pet. It improves their well-being, builds those bonds between us and our dog. I like that example. I never really even thought about that on going on dates and even us as humans. That is the reason why we're doing something fun or we're going out to have coffee or have a drink or get a great meal. And it is very bonding. So I really like that. That's a good way to kind of tie that into something we can relate to. So lastly, Victoria, I'm really excited that Dad and I will be a part of your dog behavior conference that's coming up. And I'd love for you to explain a little bit about what that is, how people can join in. And if you'd leave us with a little tidbit of wisdom from you. So it could be really anything that really is on your heart right now.
Well, I am very excited that you and your dad are speaking at the Dog Behavior Conference. It's our 11th year of the conference. It used to be in person in the UK, but after COVID, it went online and it stayed online because it means wherever in the world you are, you can join and you can listen. April the 19th to the 21st, we have 3 days of incredible presentations, 8 hours a day. But you don't have to be there live all the time, because once you register and the presentations go out live, then you have access to the presentations for a year afterwards, which is great. But it's a lovely conference because it's community and everybody is in the same room listening to the same lecture and people are chatting on the chat boards. And it's really just, it's a lovely 3 days. And people come back every year. And we have so many fabulous speakers, including yourselves, that are talking on a wide range of subjects, including Fear Free, which I'm very excited to introduce to a lot of people today. And also, you know, throughout the conference. But we go into not just the emotional well-being of pets, but pets in pain and how to recognize that, how movement can help dogs with anxiety, as well as what you do if you have a dog that is showing aggressive behavior towards people in your home, to what I'm talking about, which is Brave, which is my new course on positively.com, a series of 8 courses on coping strategies for every dog. And so, you know, we've got so many fabulous presentations. And I would encourage people to register. You go to dogbehaviorconference.com to register and become part of the community. And then they can listen to you and your dad's presentation, which again, I'm very excited because I really wanted you guys to speak for a while. And now I'm really glad you are, because I love that approach from the veterinarian side. From Marty, and then the trainer side from you, and how you guys always play off each other so well. And I think it's really interesting for attendees to be able to hear that, because we are a team. I love your father and the work that he does, the work that you do. And so I've known him a long time, but it's just we need to, as trainers, have good relationships with our veterinarians and the vet team. It's vital. And I rely on my vet team as much as I rely on my groomer or, you know, other animal care professionals to be a support system for my dog. So that's why I'm really excited. And I guess a nugget of wisdom would be to have fun with your dog. And a lot of people, when they think of training, they think of it as being, oh my God, I've got to teach my dog to sit, stay, and come when called. You actually really don't have to do that. What you really need is to foster an environment where your dog can feel comfortable with you, emotionally safe. Because look, here's where the headline with all of this. When we're talking about welfare, we're talking about safety. And we're not just talking about feeling physically safe. We're talking about emotional safety as well. All humans and animals want to be physically safe, don't we? But there's no point in feeling, even if we are physically safe, if we don't feel safe. And that's what trainers like us do. We are creating environments where we want our dogs to have fun and learn. And we want our dogs to be as social as possible within the parameters of what they can cope with. And every dog is different. But really, at its core, we want our dogs to feel safe. And I think that's where Fear Free really just shines a massive light, as well as, you know, what we do as positive trainers. So I would say that would be your focus. And also to really look at your dog. Recognize body language, and because I know you talk a lot about that in the presentation, but how you can provide your dog relief and how you can be your dog's advocate. That's also vital, and that's fear-free all the way.
Beautiful.
As well as positively, I should say. That's why there's the
synergy. Yes, they really are just so closely linked. They go right together. And I love that you mentioned the part about the veterinarian, because I do think that, and I've seen it change a lot in a really positive way, where trainers are becoming more immersed in the veterinary world. Like, we're creating some greater partnerships and really seeing the pet really as a whole being. So seeing their physical health, their emotional health, and seeing how intricately linked those are. And when one is off, the other one's going to be off as well. Have you seen that trend in your world too?
Oh, 100%, yes. And you know, there's a study that was done in the UK that showed that 80% of dogs that were bought into the surgery, into veterinary surgeries in the UK, that were displaying aggressive behavior, 80% of those dogs had some kind of pain or discomfort in their body.
Yes.
80% of dogs that were showing aggressive display. Now, that just shows you how important it is to have a relationship with your
dog. Yes, absolutely. And it makes sense. So, you know, when we're in pain, we're feeling uncomfortable, it's more likely we're going to lash out too. And same thing for our dogs. So really important that they get that veterinary check, that they're up to date. And, you know, sometimes too, if something just seems a little bit off and or the behavior is changing, that's where it's so important to really get that vet check again and to have that close working relationship. Because as you also mentioned, that emotional well-being, we want the pet, even if they are physically safe, if they don't feel physically safe, you know, they're not in a good space. So it's really helping us to get them in that good headspace where they can be calm, relaxed, and feel comfortable in their environment and know that they're secure. So thank you so much, Victoria, for this time. You are such an inspirational person and such a really just close friend to our family. And we just love you. And I'd love to have you back again, and looking forward to being with you at the Dog Behavior Conference. Thanks for joining us on Happy Paws. We hope that you continue tuning in as we talk with top experts to explore evidence-based practices that promote both the physical and emotional health in the animals we love and care for. Make sure you subscribe to avoid missing out on any of our upcoming Happy Paws episodes. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you took a minute and left us a review. For more content like this and much more, visit us at fearfreehappyhomes.com. Also, for veterinary and pet professionals looking to get fear-free certified, check out fearfreepets.com, and also check out our Fear Free podcast hosted by Steve Dale. Lastly, our music is by the fabulous Sherry Short. I grew up with Sherry in my hometown of Bonners Ferry, Idaho. Yep, only 2,000 people, but Sherry's made it big. She is incredibly talented, and I know that you will love her music just as much as I do. So check her out. Sherry with an I, Short, with this song Feeling It, coming from her EP, Gotta Live Your Life. Sherry, I love you, girl. You make me proud, and you make all of Bonners proud. Until next time, I'm your host, Mikkel Becker, wishing you a fabulous, fear-free day. I'm feeling it.